Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. Moon Boosting. Hello. Welcome.
Hello.
To Moon Moo and You. You're up, Kate.
Moon Moo and You, the collective wisdom. The call in number tonight is 347-205-9. My name is Kate Loving-Schenk, and you just heard Moonvine, a.k.a. Joan Adams. And our guest this evening is Sharon Eden, and we will be discussing courageous women. Yay!
Yay!
And that is Sharon. Our courage today has taken a new turn because my computer just isn't working where I am right now, so... Joan is now going to be handling the chat room and figuring out who's calling in, and so we're set.
We are on the air. That's the good part.
Excellent.
So being courageous is something that everybody needs to learn, but I think women especially are shy about it, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that they're shy about it. I think women are pretty courageous on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
From little girls to wise old crones, women have stories to tell. Even in this day and age, when, you know, we're supposed to have equality, women have stories to tell about their courage and how they cope with adversity. And very often, it's the woman in a family where there is adversity that will hold the family together. So they may be shy, kind of stepping up to acknowledge how courageous they are, but I think women are pretty magnificent when it comes to courage.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, I'm thinking of, yes, courage, but I don't know that we're ever recognized for that. And yes, it takes courage. Well, just having a baby requires courage. You know, giving birth, for goodness sake. But I don't know that we ever name it that. You know?
Well, you see, I think that's part of the problem, because women don't acknowledge their own courage. So how are other people going to see women as courageous creatures?
Right.
We have to start with ourselves.
Right. And there still is a tremendous amount of prejudice prejudice against women in the whole world. And
yep.
And even in the American society, there's a lot of attitudes about women that are very sad, in my opinion.
Hmm.
But well, however, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, it's the same in the UK, actually. In fact, it really is quite sad because in the kind of 60s and 70s, I was a real woman's libber, you know. I wanted a better life for my daughter. And then I came to realize, actually, that men were just as oppressed as women, actually, in different ways. For example, at the time, I had a woman friend who really didn't want to be at home with her babies. Her husband would have loved to have been the one at home with the babies, but he earned a lot more money. So he couldn't do what he really wanted to do. So, you know, I think it cuts both ways. However, when I think of my granddaughters now, One of them is a fashion plate.
Mm-hmm.
She hasn't moved beyond it's important how I look and who I attract. So, you know, there is prejudice against women, but hey, you know, some of the women who are mothers are perpetuating the old stereotypes around being a woman and being a man.
Yeah.
And when Margaret Thatcher was, you know, Prime Minister here, she didn't have a woman in the cabinet.
Oh.
She had all men. So I think there's quite a lot of work that needs to be done with women about them learning to nurture other women and pay other women the respect they deserve, and also to go beyond the stereotypes. I mean, I've seen your two pictures. You look very feisty women to me.
Yes, well,
is
we
that
are.
Right?
Yes,
absolutely.
We are.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I know I taught my daughter to be a feisty woman, and she's lovely.
Mhm. Mhm.
You know, you know, she promotes other women. But a lot of women don't. You know, there's some research, and I wish I could remember the name of it, actually, but it's been repeated, that indicates that when women are around men, they're competitive with each other.
Ah, yes.
Yeah?
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's the old biological thing, really. They want to attract the best male. You know, go back to biology. They want the best genetics that they can get. So I think women need educating quite a bit.
Well, I was just in the presence of some great women over the weekend. My aunt Helen just turned 100. And,
wow!
And we all went to see her. And I have seen her get stronger and stronger and stronger as her life has gone on. But it's an inner, radiant strength. And her son pretty much takes a lot of, you know, they spend a lot of time together. And I'll just never forget, not too long ago, they were in the restaurant, and he said to her, well, what do you want, Mom? And she said, I would like some oysters. And he goes, oh, I don't really think you want those oysters. They're so dry and blah, 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 and I really don't think you should have them. So the waitress comes around the room and comes around the table and comes to her, and she says, what would you like? She goes, I'll take the oysters. It was so funny. And at times, you know, years ago when she was younger, she was very shy and reticent to take her own courage. And now she has it, and she knows it, and it's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is something about growing older, for some women anyway. I certainly know as I've got older, I've stopped caring about a lot of things. It's kind of, here I am, this is me, and I have things to say, and maybe you'll like the things, maybe you won't like the things, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And actually, you've reminded me of my two women who've been great role models for me. And one was my son's paternal grandmother. And she actually lived to 102. And you talking about your aunt her name was Lily, on her 100th birthday, there she was, dressed in her special little blue cocktail dress with her hair up, her earrings, her makeup, and her high heels on. I mean, she was just gorgeous. And the other woman who's had quite an effect on me is an aunt by marriage, my Aunt Helen. And she raised a family, and she was married to my uncle, and they were really a good role model for relationship as well. I've spoken to her since his death, and I know for sure that it wasn't always perfect in their marriage. But they had a rule that before they went to bed, you know, they would make up on any arguments. They were just great with each other. And after his death, she kind of looked at her life and said, okay. And so what she went and did, she went off and did a degree.
Mm.
And she graduated at 73.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's wonderful.
Isn't it?
I had a friend once who was in her 80s, and we were holding a meeting at the church, a circle kind of thing. And she came in, and she was 80-some-odd at the time, and she came in a little bit late, and she said, I apologize, but I just had my first piano lesson.
Oh!
I just loved it. I said, I just love that, you know. We never stop learning, and when we stop learning, we start aging.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, you know, what I really do, I mean, how Women of Courage came about, what I do was I was working with a coach, really, because I knew there was something else. There was something else for me to do, and I didn't know what it was, blah, 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 blah. So the coach made me really talk about my work and what part of my work I really loved. And I realized that I'd done a lot of free work with young women. And although I love all the work that I do, working as a therapist and a coach with young women gave me the biggest kind of oomph. And I realized that I would have given anything to have had a woman like me around when I was a young woman.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us, I was born after the war, and I think, I don't know what it was like in the U.S., but I certainly know here, it was very conventional. The man went to work. You know, my mother couldn't work once she got married because it was a man. And coming back from the war, any women who'd been in work, they had to give their jobs up to the men who were returning. So all kinds of stuff went on. And really, my family, the women weren't wise women. I don't know what happened to them, unfortunately. And so anyway, so I'm working with this coach, and he just said to me, well, it's clear you're a woman of courage from your history, and this is the work you want to do with other women. So it was just like, now, why didn't I think of that? You know,
oh,
why didn't
wonderful.
I think of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so what I'm really passionate about is working, well, with men as well. I have to be truthful with men as well because it's about humanity, really. But my speciality was with women. And it's about helping people find their purpose, passion, and power so that they're truly alive.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, it sounds like your aunt, bless her with that, you know, I have the oysters. She's truly alive.
I liked your book because of the practical applications, the something to do every day.
Yeah.
Do you mean my freebie when you sign up for the e-sign?
Yeah.
Yeah. I read that too. That's wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
It is great. And also today I've been, and the one I loved that I downloaded today that I had not seen for some reason was about your, and I can't wait, I'm waiting for my sister to come on because she would so love it, it's the Your Own Kick Butt Angel.
Yes. Yeah.
I know Betty Rush has got to have a kick butt angel in the mail in the next week or so.
You know, it's so wonderful because you can only get them in the States. My sister lives in America. That's how she got it to send to me.
Oh, really?
But you can't get them in the UK. So you lot are so lucky.
And it comes under that name, actually? A kick butt
angel? Yeah. Yeah, it's a little kick butt angel. And it's made by Hallmark.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's one of their Down to Earth Angels series. And you can get all different kinds, including, you know, sister angels and teacher angels. But my sister saw this and she went, that's for Sharon.
I love it.
So you can have fun with it.
I am now, whatchamacallit, Googling it. Pick Bud Angels. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
What a fun gift for any woman, and with your and add the printout to it, you know, that you have is just as delightful. We all need that.
Thank you.
I love that. And I do think there are ways that we encourage each other. I think women are real good at that. And I, did you see the movie The Color Purple?
Yeah.
I have, yeah.
The women, and women of courage, for goodness sake, but the support of the women for each other was absolutely amazing. And I walked away from that movie thinking, what power those women had. And had to have to survive the times, for sure. But
absolutely,
they literally supported each other no matter what.
Mm. Yeah. And that's what women do, generally, when they're not being in competition to get their man or whatever. But one of the problems, of course, is in the corporate world, that women have often turned themselves into pseudo-men to get on. So they don't support women. But generally, that is part of our biochemical makeup. We actually have more of a particular chemical that is about affiliation.
Oh.
It's not interesting.
Yes. It's about cooperation, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And some years ago, I knew a member of parliament, one of my local MPs was a woman, and she said, I don't know how it works in the States, but in the UK, in the parliament, you will get cross-party committees that work on particular things. And she said, when you worked on a committee where there were men, there would be a lot of talking and backbiting and blah, 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 blah. And things would happen so slowly. But she'd been on a couple of cross-party committees that were just women. And she said, it didn't matter what party we were. The women worked cooperatively together to achieve whatever outcome, you know, was set for their committee. And really, I think that's how we're wired up. With all other things being equal, we're really out there supporting each other. And I certainly know when I was younger and had my children, it was the women, you know, women helped each other, women looked after the kids, women did this, women did that. I don't know about if that was your experience, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I even took a friend's child to the hospital once with a shoulder out of place. But,
yeah,
you know, women jump in and do what has to be done, regardless.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we're so gorgeous.
Yes.
Right.
It is.
Right. Especially when it comes to the children.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have another thing that happened over the weekend with my aunt was that I spent some time with my three nieces who are now in their late 20s, early 30s, and that was just one of the most wonderful experiences. We all got to, all four of us got sort of snuck away and gathered together in a circle and told each other our secrets. And it was so much fun, and we laughed, and as the weekend, it was a three-day birthday party, and as the party went on, we just laughed and laughed and laughed so much that I could hardly wait to get those pictures. My gosh, it'll be fun.
What I noticed about these
women is, and about younger women, because I work with women their age, and because I'm a nurse, and nursing is a woman's profession largely, and But I noticed that the women coming up now really are more forthright than we were, or I should say I was, their age.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They're very honest.
Yes. Yes, and I noticed that with our daughter, Kathy, who is in her 30s. But Kathy speaks her mind a whole lot faster than I did before I was 50, you know. She says what she thinks, and you don't push her around. You know,
right.
I think our generation was taught to be quiet and obey. And then we rebelled against that. And it took us a while to get everything kind of leveled off again so that we were tolerable. You know, because I came up, well, like you say, I was born after the war. And, you know, I knew how to play bridge and how to feed the Lions Club, as I laugh and say. But it never occurred to me I was going to have to do anything more in life. And then all of a sudden, life flipped and women's roles changed, and I had to hurry to catch up. Yeah, just real interesting to watch these younger women.
Yeah, and they're really, they're gorgeous too, aren't they? Aren't they just beautiful?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Inside and out. And my nieces are so beautiful, but they aren't hung up on their beauty. You know what I mean? They're really completely into being expressive and alive and totally communicative, and then they allow their feelings to rush through them, and they don't hold back. It's just really beautiful to see. It really is.
How wonderful.
Yeah, hopefully we did not give them the same messages that we received, I think. As women, I think they came up in the middle of all of our transition.
Right.
So maybe they learned along the way from us as we were learning. You know, it was a learning experience for me.
I think you're so right, actually, that I remember when my daughter was about 13 and something went down with her father, and, you know, she was just forthright, she said it how it was, and I looked at her and I thought, my goodness, if only I could have done that when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we do help them along as we change, but also, you know, sometimes unconsciously, I think unconsciously I help my daughter become the young woman that I wish I'd been.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I think we do that. We laugh around here when Kathy was like 13, 14. She was a lifeguard at the swimming pool.
Oh, and wow.
One of the doctors did something he shouldn't have done with his child in the pool. I don't know whether he jumped off the side or what he did, but he broke a rule. And he was a physician here in town. And Kathy called him out. You know, you're out. I said, I cannot believe you did that. You know, he said, why not? He broke a rule. You know, I wouldn't have done that. I would never have done that. But I brag on her, you know, all the time. We talk about it. I say, yep, that's back to that swimming pool thing. But she did it as a young woman. You know, she didn't back off of anything. And I do think they learn from us, and I think we send them those messages. I really do.
Yeah,
I think we're letting them know that's okay. That's acceptable behavior. And Kate, you're bound to see it at work, where the nurses are certainly more upfront than they were 30 years ago.
Yes.
I saw a nurse once when I was working in a nursing home, and she chewed a doctor up one side and right down the other, and I thought, woo, you know, if I'm ever sick, I want you on my side.
Exactly.
But, you know, she did not play any games and kowtow to him. She just called it like she saw it, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, it really is. And that's the courage thing. I don't want us to get too far away from that, because I think the courage issue is the one, and it does take courage to be who we are. And I think we're just learning that. I think as women, we're just learning how to be us.
See ourselves. Totally. Yep.
And not play funny games.
I think that's so true, because it, in a way, it's the easy option to go along with things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In a strange way, for me now, it would be the hard option, because I can't do that anymore. But, you know, it does take courage to stand your ground. It does take courage to perhaps go against, you know, the grain of what other people think or say. And that's part, I think, of growing up.
Yes, it is. You've grown up when you can say it like it is without worrying what other people think.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and the courage comes in all different shapes and sizes, doesn't it? I mean, for some people, it's a courageous thing to get up in the morning.
Yeah.
There's a lovely, I don't know if you ever read a book called The Invitation by Auriah Mountain Dreamer.
No.
Okay. Well, it's a book that starts with a poem, and each stanza of the poem becomes part of a chapter. And really, I can't remember the poem verbatim, but it starts off more or less saying, I'm not interested in how much money you earn. I want to know who you are.
Yeah.
And one of the stanzas says something like, I want to know if you can get up after a, you know, dark night and do what needs to be done for the children.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And for me, you know, lots of women have had that kind of courage.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Say the name again of the book.
It's called The Invitation.
The Invitation?
Yeah, The Invitation. And it's by Auriah, O-R-I-A-H, Mountain Dreamer.
Mountain Dreamer?
Yeah, Auriah Mountain Dreamer.
Wow.
And it really, it's a lovely book. It's about her journey, actually, her journey of, you know, becoming herself and grasping her courage to be the woman that she really was.
That sounds like a great book. I'll look it up.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you Google it, you will go straight to websites, loads of websites
mm-hmm.
to do with The Invitation. But you'll also find her website as well.
Have you actually written books that have been published, or do you mostly do your e-books?
Well, it's really interesting you should say that, because I'm working on a book to be a real book to be published. Up until now, I've mainly wrote articles and my e-zines and, you know, my little e-books, really. And I am working on a book right now, which is about purpose, passion, and power in the workplace.
Oh, that's exciting.
Ooh. Purpose, passion, and power.
Yeah.
I like
audacious,
that.
Audacious purpose, passion, and power.
Well, when do you expect that to be published?
that's a $64,000 question. by September, I will have my publishing proposal totally ready, because that's quite a journey in itself, actually, preparing a proposal, plus enough of the book to approach publishers with. So then I'm just going to go for it. So, when I get a publisher, it will probably come out something like next summer, 2010, something like that.
And you're going to come back and visit us and launch.
Yay!
Wouldn't that be wonderful? Yay!
Yes.
I think that's a nice vision.
Yes.
Yes, I will definitely come back and launch.
That would be wonderful.
And do you know the title of the book? What is the title of the book?
Oh, that the title of the book is Secret. Okay. It's a secret. It's because you two kind of know me now, and I'm not your usual kind of person, really. So it's just got the kind of title you wouldn't really expect. So I'm keeping it hush hush at the moment.
Wonderful. I love a little mystery.
Yes.
Yeah, we like that. Yes.
But tell us,
all will be revealed.
Yeah.
Let's give our audience the thing back to your little, the little e-book, the little, I cannot think of the name right now to save my life, but it's a little exercise.
I know what, yes, you're talking about my 5-day Energizer program.
Yes. If you're willing to share, get you to tell about a couple of those. The first one I can think of is the one where you shake your body, because I think that's fun. But just so that we give folks some tools for getting in touch with that.
Okay. So let me think. You tell me the favorites. You tell me your favorites, and I'll talk about them, how they work and what
okay.
to do.
Talk about shaking.
Shaking is really so simple. Really, if your energy is low, right, mm-hmm. if you need to energize yourself, all you have to do, there are many variations, but you can actually just shake your body. Just wiggle, let your arms go, everything move, and biochemically you start sending around all the right kind of hormones and chemicals to lift your energy and also to lift your mood. And there's I've got another favorite one, actually, that works every time. You know, if you're feeling a bit flat or low or whatever, you jump up and down 10 times on the spot, very, very fast. All right? Now,
yes.
I have to say, women, hold on to your boobies, because, you know, sometimes those of us who are a bit bigger, that's what we need to do. But you know, you will feel so different. It's one of the things I do as a therapist when I'm working with people who are stressed or depressed. I get them to do that too because, you know, it can help shift your energy immediately. So that's dead easy. That one is really good.
Helps you to breathe too. Go ahead.
Sorry?
It helps you to breathe deeply too.
Well, you certainly have to breathe deeply if you're jumping up and down. So tell me another one of your favorites, and I'll build on that.
How about the Have Adventures?
Oh, definitely. You know, life was meant to be lived enjoyably. And to be open to adventures is so enjoyable. For example, I never know when I walk out of my door to, you know, go down to the local shops or whatever, who I'm going to meet or what I'm going to see, right?
Yeah.
I remember once walking in London, and it was a miserable kind of day, and I wasn't feeling that good. And suddenly, there was a kind of sunlight hit some tin can in the gutter, right? And it was the most magical thing. It was almost like there was a jewel there, and it threw up light. So for me, that is having an adventure, having your eyes open, having an adventure. Plus, you don't know who you're going to meet, do you?
Yes, that's right.
You don't know what conversation you're going to have.
Well, isn't that about expecting something wonderful, you know, or expecting an adventure?
I think you're absolutely right, because there's a part of our brain called the reticular activating system that it thought has to do with motivation. And what they do know is that sensory information and emotional information kind of passes through it. And when you have an expectation of adventures, you're right, you're thinking of the positive, really. You program that part of you to look for them. For example, when you buy a car, let's say you bought a red car, and you take it out for the first drive, which color cars do you notice?
All the red ones.
All the red ones. And I can say that because I've got a red one. and it's exactly the same principle. So if you go out looking for adventures, you'll have lovely adventures. And of course, it's about living energetically. It's about being alive, being present in the moment. So many people live their lives somewhere else.
Yeah.
They're caught up in trances. They hypnotize themselves with, you know, their thinking. And they're not alive and present in the moment. And that's such a shame.
Yes, because if you're always thinking about the past or the future, it's almost like you've left your spirit behind.
Spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And kind of, you know, expecting adventures is one way to bring you into the present. The other thing that I do talk about as well is being curious.
Yeah,
you remember? You know, when you see a young child exploring the world, you know, the look on their face, the adventures they have, and being curious is about always being open, you know, exploring, you know, trying oysters when you're 100 years old. You know, curiosity is, I think, one of the essential ingredients that keep us powerful and alive and courageous, actually. Because it means we're up for things.
I like the idea, too, of, and I can't remember exactly how you said it, but my version would be to focus on one sense a day.
Oh, yeah.
One day you taste and one day, yeah. Because then you become that appreciative, more appreciative of that sense, for one thing.
Absolutely. Because for a lot of people, they don't even notice. They don't notice what they see, what they hear, what they smell. I know it's the least developed of our senses, but my goodness, you know, what information we can pick up with our smelling and what they taste. I smoked terrible, terrible for years and years, always trying to give it up. I wish I'd never started, and eventually I cracked it. And the difference, you know, it was like I had explosions in my mouth with taste.
Ah, wonderful.
Wow.
Mm.
There's something about the sense of smell also can bring you into memories will just suddenly surface. In a way, it will do that with taste and hearing too, but I really see it with smelling, with the sense of smell. And all of a sudden you're transported into a different memory. That
absolutely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing, really.
Yep, and you're dead right. You know, the sense of smell, although it seems to be our least developed, is very powerful. Very powerful. Yes, oh, I'm just smelling newly prepared coffee. That's a memory, but it feels really good.
I love the smell of coffee. Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. So really, the 5-day Energizer program was really to give people lots of easy tips to really lift their spirits, get going, and be more alive.
But it's the easy tips that we need. You know, it's the things that are simple enough to learn to do quickly.
Yes.
It has to be simple or we're not going to do it. We're busy.
Absolutely right. I agree with you. And that's what I like to do. And in the book I'm writing, it's the same thing. It has exercises in it, but things you can just do like now. And I think that comes from the fact that I was trained in the early 80s as a psychotherapist, and I was trained in the old school where you would be in therapy for years and years and years, really. And not long after I started practicing, I thought, this is crazy. People don't need to do this, actually. People are really very resourceful. If you just help people to tap into their resources, you know, they're off and running. And ever since, I've been very much of that kind of opinion, that apart from some really, severe psychological damaging, in general, all people need are the tools and some support and some guidance and working on their thinking as well, all that's included. But give people things they can take away and start doing easily, and they're off and running.
Yes.
Right, right.
It just evolved, yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder if you get that as a nurse too.
Yeah, there's so much involved with taking care of people. In my opinion, the sense of touch, the sense of touch, and I mean, nurses don't touch their patients enough. They don't massage them. Massage them, touch them, make them feel safe. And that's where I think nurses could really excel. If they realize that's one thing, it would be a really special boost to the profession.
Yes.
That takes vulnerability on the side of the patient also, Kate.
Yes, it does.
You know, I think we all kind of shy away from that, or maybe it's just me. That's
just
a big
you.
Thing. Yeah.
We'll have to work on you.
Yeah, but now I'm a hugger, you know. My whole family's huggers. But I'm talking about in a strange environment with strangers around, you know, that would be an entirely different thing to me. I mean, I just think that's a very vulnerable place to be. And the nurses need to realize that too.
And, you know, we don't talk about the healing touch for no reason, because the power of touch is you know, very, very healing. I remember reading another lovely book, which is an old book now, which is called Don't Push the River.
I've got that one.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
It's a beautiful book, isn't it?
Yes.
And in it she talks about, you know, being a nurse and that baby who was seriously ill and they thought was going to die, and she wanted to hold it and do things with it. And the specialist kind of said, well, okay, if you do that, it's going to die anyway, so do it. And actually, the baby lived.
Oh, my. Lovely.
Yes. And we've made a mistake, back years ago, where we didn't believe in holding our babies and, you know, picking them up when they cried. And, when mine were born, I broke all the rules, you know. I brought my babies and loved on my babies. And, you know,
wonderful.
And then people would say, oh, you can't do that. I'd just watch me.
Right.
I'm not going to let that baby cry. They're crying for a reason. I'm going to find out what it is. But,
absolutely.
You know, but it's been a change in consciousness, I think. It's opened us a little bit to that importance of that touch. That's proven. That's an absolute proven, scientifically proven healing method. I wonder if the, you remember back in my childhood, in fact, the family doc, you know, would come to the house and have a cup of coffee and check on the children or whatever, you know. But I think that was what he was doing with TLC. They just came in with a little TLC for everybody. You're going to feel better in a couple of days. All of that reassurance and all of those things that that the doctors don't do so much of anymore.
No.
But
yep,
I think
yep,
that's why those
right.
fellows were successful. Mm. They weren't as scientifically whatever as the ones are now, but they were, you knew they cared.
Well, when they showed up at the house, you immediately felt better.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
The doctor's here. Yeah. Everything's fine. Right.
Yep, yep. It might take him might have taken him a few hours to get there, but boy, once he hit the, it just came into the house, everything changed.
And I think the home health nurses do the same thing now.
Yeah.
Mm. I know when my father-in-law was in his senior years and ill, and but home health would come, the home health nurses would come to the house, and oh, that was just the highlight of his week.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
When the home
yeah.
health folks came, yeah. So, yeah, we have a lot to learn yet, huh?
Yes,
well,
we do.
I think there's, you know, I really do feel in my bones, and, I talk with a lot of people doing different things, you know, doing different work, that there is a real kind of organic push kind of seems to be really happening at this time with more and more people coming into healing work, right? Mm-hmm. However they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for example, I go to my hairdresser, And she, you know, it's no big deal. It's not an expensive place or anything. But she treats you with such care, and you get so well looked after, which is a very healing thing to do.
Yeah.
So
yes.
I think, you know, different people in different professions, I just feel there's a kind of whole movement that's going on, really, you know, from the collective unconscious or whatever you want to call it. You know, it's time. We've had enough of this, you know, old way of being. We want something more and warm and human and connecting, more feminine,
that.
Really.
Yes. Every single week after this show, we say that. Because
oh, do you?
Every guest, yes, every guest brings a piece of the pie.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is the most amazing thing to see. And we've had many guests, but everyone comes with a little different approach, a little different niche, if you will, to creating the whole picture. It's the most fascinating. I think it's a full-scale spiritual movement. I really do.
Yeah.
I think we're just sitting on the edge of something huge and wonderful. But, yeah, I get excited every week.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? Because, I absolutely agree with you. I think that is what's happening. There's some spiritual evolution going on here, and lots of people, including you, doing this program. That's part of it.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that it's really happening on the Internet, and it's a beautiful thing to see.
Uh-huh.
And maybe parts of the world still need to catch up. But you'll see pockets of it here and there, and it's a really, it's just a tremendous thing to see.
Yeah.
Very, very energizing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like almost sometimes
and
I feel like we're standing, we can see, we can look down on it almost and see it happening.
Yeah.
No, almost rise above it and look down and see all of these different parts coming together.
How
and I don't know where we fit in all that. Right now, we're the collectors of all this wisdom at this point. But, and you know, we kind of jumped into this thing in a faith walk, and to see it happen, just is an amazing thing to me. Just fascinates me. But
yeah.
It, for me, it's really thrilling as well because I'm very subversive with it. You know, you go into organizations and generally if you said spiritual, everybody would run.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know,
right.
Yeah.
That's not what we talk about. But when I work with people, whatever way, I said to somebody the other day, if they asked me to go and train them on making Jell-O, I would find a way to get spirituality in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I agree.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yes.
And in fact, when I work with people in organizations, I when I talk about stuff, I say to them, well, you know, I'm talking about the oomph, and you'll know what your oomph is. And people nod their heads. It's there.
Yeah. The unexplainable oomph.
Yes.
What a nice expression.
Oh, boy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. So our job, our challenge from you is to encourage women to be more courageous and to become more courageous ourselves.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Every day I can just see opportunities arise all the time to do that. It's really something that always is available to tackle and to, you know, just become braver and more, just becoming ourselves more and more.
Well,
it is very brave, yeah.
I'm back to the vulnerable word, you know, but Chef Keem is always saying, and we produce these squidulins, it's about being vulnerable and being real.
Yeah.
Your readers. And when you become real, you are more vulnerable, like the Velveteen Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Velveteen Rabbit's wonderful.
Mm.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I want to spread the word that being more vulnerable, actually, you become stronger. And, you know, some people walk around like, I'm strong, strong, strong. And they're really brittle, but when we allow ourselves to be more vulnerable, we're like the reed by the water. You know, if the wind comes, the hurricane comes, the reed bends and it comes back again. And for me, a most wonderful part of my own growing journey was to enable myself to be vulnerable. It's just a real joy, and I became stronger through that.
I'm thinking two things. First of all, Mimi is saying on the chat room that women need the courage to demand more from fathers. And,
from fathers?
And from fathers, yes.
Uh-huh.
To allow the men, I think what she means is to allow the men, to encourage the men to parent.
Oh, yes.
You know, to give them that, let them have their role, for goodness sake, but encourage them to be that. The other is the sentence, Kate. You had a sentence on your lens today about your Aunt Helen, and you said she sits there and watches it go by. What did you say? But she didn't get upset with everything. She just allowed life to happen around her.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I'll have to send you that link, Sharon, so you can see what she looks like. I mean, she just has this radiant quality about her. She looks like a beacon of love.
Very peaceful. Mm-hmm.
There's something about her I've never seen quite. I don't really know too many 100-year-old people, but I know that some of them don't really look like she does. And I'll just have to send you that. I'll Twitter it to you. It's really very
wonderful, amazing. The opposite of brittle. You know,
a lot of times
we see senior women or senior people that just seem to get harder and harder and harder and more and more brittle, and she just seems to emit love and peace. And I can easily imagine, and I don't know the lady and just saw the pictures and read the story, but it was like she wasn't easily offended by anybody around her. You know,
the children weren't
upsetting her. She was just enjoying the moment.
Yeah, it's like I was comparing her to a tree. a very old tree that didn't allow, just is rooted and grounded, and the world can just go by, and the tree is largely unaffected, and witnesses so much over a period of long time.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, trees love to be hugged. They really do. And one of one, and my one niece, well, my one niece has three children, and one of them is what she, one of them is a self-proclaimed tree hugger. And she's not at all embarrassed. She just hugs them. And actually, I think she lived in one for, she's only 12, but she lived in one for quite some time and hung out there for a long time. So these kids growing up are something else. It's great.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them are just so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they see things and are exposed to more than we ever were in a lifetime. And the wisdom. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter, and she continuously amazes me with what she sees and her appreciation of nature and, you know, all of that. They really do have a different view, this the new little ones. They're bringing something new to the world, I think.
Very,
And like you said, because, you know, I'm thinking of my youngest granddaughter, and she, her and the internet, you'd think she's been born with it.
Right.
And I think there's something about them, you know, that in the way that we're becoming global, that they're just, you know, they're learning, I think maybe the first generation really in a way, that we're all one.
Yes.
Actually. But, you know, through using the internet, I mean, she'll speak to people in different countries and everything. And it's just that we're all one. It's not, you know, I think they're the first generation that can have that experience, I think.
I think that's true. I think their worldview is different than
it's
ours.
Global.
Yes.
It's global. Yeah.
Yes.
Automatically global. Yeah.
All inclusive. Right. Right. I know Jessica says she likes to learn about cultures, and she's 7.
Oh, wow.
My goodness, what can you learn about cultures at 7? But she's fascinated by that, you know. But,
fabulous.
Yeah.
That is great.
She's a little woman of courage.
Yeah.
She is. She is. I love it.
I do, too. I do, too.
Oh,
and
that red hair. Wow.
Yeah.
Has she got red hair?
Oh, but yes. Those do. Yes. Bright red. Oh,
fantastic.
Yes. She has just figured out that it's beautiful, you know. She's just learning that she gets attention from that red hair, and she flips it around, you know. Funny, 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 funny.
Oh, my gosh. I love it.
I do, too. And we are fast running out of minutes here, believe it or not. This is the fastest hour. We have 1 minute remaining. We thank you so much for being with us. How wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
I wanted to meet you from the minute I met you, read your book.
Well, thank you, too. I'm, you know, really delighted to have been invited and have the joy of talking with you. Thank you so much.
It's been a joy for us, too. Thank you.
And here is where I'm supposed to click on the music, right? I'm learning here, y'all. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Love you all.
Good night.
Good night.